After 32 years, I came out of the closet as a gay Christian pastor. Finally, on the outside of that suffocating prison, I'm looking around and I'm like, we can't stay here. It's not enough to become informed. We have to do something about the harm we're still witnessing within systems and spaces we've been loyal to for so long. It's time we become reformers. All right, everybody, welcome back to Confessions of a Reformer. I'm your host, Mike Maeshiro, and I've got a controversial episode to do today. Before I get into the intro, I have a special guest with me today. She's been on the podcast before. Her name is Mika Perrin. She's my sister and co-conspirator in the work that I do. Mika has hosted our Ashes group, which is our deconstruction support group, basically. Is that the right word?
Yeah.
Support?
Not support. Well, kind of. It functions that way sometimes.
Our deconstruction discussion group.
Discussion group, yeah.
And they've been going for almost a year now.
Over a year.
Wow. That's wild. Anyway, we want to do an episode today on the subject of Jesus. The man, the myth, the legend.
Oh, God.
The God.
Right.
Right? Question mark. Because in deconstruction, there are lots of directions people can go, lots of lengths or depths that people can get to or stop at, right? And so for me, we know the story. I deconstructed first because of like how the church viewed and treated queer people. But then that didn't stop there. I went into like, you know, the Bible itself. Where did the Bible come from? How did we get here? And then beyond that, you know, and I think I knew the kind of the journey it was going to I was going to go on and just kind of push some of these subjects away because I didn't want to look at them. And Jesus was probably like one of the ultimate bosses of this process for me. And Mika has her version of that as well. So we want to talk about what Christianity has done to Jesus, the person, the message. Obviously, Jesus as a subject is too big for us to cover in a single episode. We don't have the energy or the time to do that in one sitting.
Right.
Nor are we experts on this, right? We're just two people who were raised in evangelicalism, who were diehard, committed believers.
Yeah.
And then because of compelling evidence and conviction, we had to like reevaluate what do we believe, right? So anyway, here we are. Do you want to add anything to what I've just said about the intro here?
I will just say in that Ashes Deconstruction group, we've been meeting for a year and we just started talking about Jesus. So that's not like a light subject to just jump into. There's
right.
a lot of groundwork, a lot of preparation that they needed to be able to even come to the place to have this conversation.
And that I think we needed.
For me,
yeah.
yeah.
For
and
sure.
I think I was like even slower with them because even my own process was faster than I was prepared for and just kind of reeling like, what the heck? So it's big. It's a big topic. And yeah. But I think the most dramatic part of my deconstruction was navigating Jesus and who is this person and what did we do to him and how does that work now? So,
So I guess some questions that come up typically in this space, people would just want to be asking is like, well then what do you believe about Jesus then? Right? Like the question is Jesus the Son of God? Tell me, right? Yes or no. And it's never like a question of curiosity or wanting to learn. It's, do I see you as a full person anymore? Or are you now a traitor and other to me, right? Is usually what that question
is. It's a threat, for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
So how would you respond to a question like that?
God, I don't talk to people who ask questions like that.
I think that's true, too.
I'm not around him. I won't do it.
Because it's an unfair question, right? Like, that's it's so agenda-driven, and it's not about truth or humanity or care or love. It's about in-group, out-group.
Yeah.
Tell me who to accept and who to reject. Right.
Are you on my team or are you for me or are you for against me? Right. Yeah. Like taking that quote and weaponizing it.
Right. Okay. So approaching the subject of Jesus, where do we want to start?
Oh God. I mean, okay. So a disclaimer that I gave my Ashes people and I think is helpful coming into the conversation is we're taught so much that Jesus is like the part of the Godhead that we can identify with the most. He's like the most, like he is human, so he's personable. He's kind of the one who's going to protect you from the wrath of Father God, but he's also not a ghost that's like living in you or something, right? Like Jesus is like the personified version of God that I think, at least for me growing up, I was pushed to attach to more.
If you've seen me, you've seen the Father.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, if I got Jesus right, like everything else is kind of fine. And so the idea of approaching like any beliefs around Jesus is really threatening because it's like the core of my faith. It's like the whole basis of everything. And I think also growing up in an age where it's like, oh, it's about relationship, not religion. the relationship is with Jesus. And so I think this feels like a really high stakes topic. And so for me, I think making the differentiation between God, who I put Jesus's face on and have a relationship with, differentiating from historical Jesus, who was an actual human being who lived an actual specific life, and kind of making a distinction between those two people as not necessarily being the same person, which is already like a heretical thing to say. But I think for me, getting to separate out, like, let's let Jesus be a historical figure and we'll kind of work through who he actually was as a person before it affects, like, I said this prayer, this person means this to me, he's going to save me from eternal damnation, like that right. whole, like, yeah. So I think for me, making the differentiation made it a lot lower stakes.
Okay.
And it was a lot more like, okay, I can approach this person as a person, and then whatever repercussions come from that, I can work that out later. But I needed to separate it first so I could actually receive any of the information from the get-go.
Yeah. Wow, helpful. That's great. I think that's a really good insight. When you said that, I guess when I think back to my journey around the subject of Jesus, I had to like recognize my own intellectual integrity. I was like, oh, there's a part of this, like this part of my deconstruction process that feels off limits.
Yeah.
Like untouchable. I'm not allowed to ask questions about Jesus. I can ask questions about hell or creation or Noah's Ark. Or what, Jonah, right? Sure, we can talk about those things. Women, yeah. you know, mm-hmm. but sexuality, but not Jesus.
Right.
Like, that's the one subject that's, like, actually above deconstruction. You can deconstruct all you want, but Jesus doesn't fall under that, right?
Yeah, totally.
And I was like, oh, wait, that's not fair. That's not honest. You know, I was recognizing there's a very strong bias in me that's been in there for a long time. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of scary to get really honest with myself about that. And then my integrity demanded that I face it and then start doing some work to undo that bias and that arresting of my critical thinking, you know?
Yeah.
Did you have any of that going on?
Yeah, I think I definitely felt off limits, but I think it was more of a self-protection thing that it's like, okay, I can let go of this about my faith. I can let go of this about the Bible.
Not a deal breaker.
Yeah, like, right. I mean, a lot of that's like causing harm, so I'm like, yeah, get it out of here. But when it comes to Jesus, it was like, this was the one space that was still protecting me, that like, this part of God is like loving and caring and is also like sacrificing himself for me, but like the whole narrative. And so
this person stuck closer than a brother.
Yeah. Like, I mean, from our charismatic spaces, Jesus was like my husband, you know, like that was the
I wasn't attitude. Allowed to marry a man.
Right. The bride of Christ and everything. Right? Right. And so I'm like, this is the person who's supposed to be the safest in the universe. Right. And so having to like, let some of that go, it was less like someone else is telling me I'm not allowed to, and more like I'm terrified of you taking that away from me.
What were you afraid of losing? Were you even conscious of that, or was it just a visceral reaction?
I think it was more visceral, because I don't know, like from the get-go it's like, invite Jesus into your heart. Like, yeah. He was the cornerstone or the safe one. I don't know. So I think it was more like, if I don't have Jesus, am I even a Christian? Do I even know anything? Like, do I believe in God? Like, if Jesus isn't a player in this, what is true anymore? Because I think there's a lot that I could let go of around Christian culture and around certain beliefs that were harmful, but Jesus hadn't harmed me. And so, at least not that I was aware of at the moment, like in the beginning.
Yeah.
And so I was like, am I just like messing with this irrevocably just because? And
is this worth it?
Yeah.
Because
I was like, there's no coming back from this.
Right. That's true. That's true.
So that was scary.
Yeah. Okay.
And I think I fought it a lot. Like, even reading through some of the stuff that I read through, even as we were talking through things, I think I was, like, fighting it at every turn. And then I had a moment where I was like, oh, no. And it, like, clicked for me. And I was like, okay.
And once you did turn, you, like, turned hard and fell fast. And you, like, then raced past where I was. And I was like, oh, what, Mika? What did you just say? That was wild. And also, just for context, when Mika and I were both in this process, we were doing it together. But we had several other close people in our lives who we were doing this together. Like, I don't know, like 6 or 8 of us or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was a journey because we all shared so much background in our faith journeys. We had been part of each other's lives. And anyway, so to like go through that process together and have different people have different realizations or different grieving points of acknowledgement, like that was, it just added more momentum and fuel to the fire of our own, like, oh my God.
Yeah. So, I think that's where we started like scattering. We were like, me. I don't want to do this. Oh, God.
Okay, so something that came up for me while you were saying that was the whole, like, subject of Jesus. One of the things that was pressing me to move into it was I was becoming increasingly almost incapable of entertaining a God or a universe or a world where sin played the part that I was taught it was playing. Mm. People were worthless, wretched sinners. Nothing we did was good enough for God. We needed Jesus to die on our behalf to be acceptable to God. And God was killing Jesus through people,
yeah,
or using the murder of Jesus as his way of reconciling humanity to himself,
right,
back when God was a man to me, right, male.
Right.
And I was like, this doesn't fit. Like, the stuff I've deconstructed at this point, this narrative doesn't actually, like, have any place in my worldview anymore. This doesn't make sense. I actually see more regression and harm coming from holding this belief than if I could let it go. And it just kept pushing and getting bigger and bigger in the room I was in. And so that kind of, I think, was a catalyst for me to finally decide, okay, let's look at Jesus, because some of this is, like, it's untenable. I can't keep,
yeah,
being here. So, right, anyway, yeah, I just want to throw that in. Like, that was because that's another thing that comes up. Like, when you talk about Jesus, of course we're going to talk about penal substitutionary atonement, right?
Yeah.
And the cross and the shedding of blood for the forgiveness of sins, right?
Right.
Without the shedding of blood, there can be.
Right.
And so all that stuff is like the linchpin of Christianity, you know? And
yeah,
so you're not just like, oh, am I going to deconstruct Jesus? You're also like, if Jesus goes, does that mean my faith community goes?
Right.
Because even at that point, we'd experienced so much loss and like ostracization.
Yeah.
From our faith community, but we still had some semblance of a faith community and identity, right?
Right, and a lot of that was, I follow Jesus.
Right.
Like,
right. I'm not like a Bethel person or a charismatic or an evangelical, but I'm a Jesus follower.
Yeah,
totally.
Like, that was kind of the last, like, the last thing that was holding
on. True. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So, all that just, I think the point of this is just, like, giving some background. There was a lot of thought and process. This didn't happen overnight. And I don't even know that we're here to tell anybody what to think or believe about Jesus.
I don't want
to
do that.
Yes. I also don't want to do that. And I don't know that it's our place to do it. But I do want us to have a dialogue around our process with this subject and just kind of share some of our own thoughts, you know, based on what we came across and how we processed through it. So, from the historical human side of Jesus and what you've learned and looked at, what are some things that stood out to you that you're like, hey, this was compelling, this was noteworthy, this really matters in my weighing out of this, you know? Yeah.
I got nervous when you said that. Okay, so I guess I'm trying to weigh out, like, how specific I should be.
I mean, be as specific as is true to your process without, like, overstepping to the point where you're now, like, pushing somebody into a position or a place that they're not ready to be in.
Right, okay.
And you guys, I'm saying that not because I'm patronizing anybody. I genuinely do think addressing something this culturally and this central to people's culture and identity when it comes to Christians, this is not a small deal. This is a big thing to be looking at, to be asking about. It takes guts to even consider honestly wrestling this out.
Yeah.
So I think my reason in wanting to be hesitant and selective about what we do share here is because I want to be respectful of whoever's listening to this, like, your process and your timing and how far and which whatever depth you want to go with deconstructing what you've been told is true. And so I think that's the line, is like,
yeah,
share whatever you feel like is necessary and constructive, and then, you know, leave out the things that maybe are more you centric and not so much about the subject itself.
Right. Yeah.
I guess.
Okay. And I think I would echo that too. Like, even in preparing to talk to my Ashes group about some of this, I had a couple weeks where I was like, I'm sad, I don't want to talk about this, because there's like a bit of a grieving process, I think, that happened when I first deconstructed it, and then leading other people through it happened again, and I was like, this is sad.
Yeah.
And I'd even told a friend of mine who is like kind of deconstructing, and I had recommended a book to her, and after I had like taught this to the Ashes group again, I messaged her and I was like, don't read the book. Like, do it at some point, don't do it now, it's sad.
No.
So yeah, I think I'm like on the same page there, that I'm like, I think there's a lot about Jesus that you don't have to deconstruct in some ways. Like, I think the penal substitutionary atonement, the God needing to sacrifice and, like, him needing blood, I'm like, I think we need to kind of work through that. But I think relationship with Jesus and that kind of stuff, I'm like, some of that might not be necessary to still like have a functional faith that you feel like comfortable with or you feel like morally sound. Like, I think some of that is still on the table. So I would agree. I'm like, I think it's important to explore, but I think there's a line for every person that's probably different.
Yeah.
So I think for me, when I was educating myself, doing a little bit of research, starting to understand and have more conversations around this historical Jesus, I think one of the bigger takeaways for me was I look at historical Jesus as if he's me. Like, as if his context is my context and he's a person like me, and therefore the way that he thought about the world, the way that he navigated stuff, the choices he made would be similar to me, but better, is kind of the framework that I approached him with. And the more I learned about him, the more I'm like, this guy is so different. He's an ancient Jew, right? And so obviously just from that context, he's gonna be different. But I think I was taught to read the Bible and put myself in his shoes and be like, to experience God and humanity from Jesus's perspective. But then realizing I wasn't doing that. I was superimposing my perspective on Jesus and making him in my own image.
Yeah.
And
you're the only person who's ever done that.
I know, no one does that. And I definitely wasn't encouraged by any outside sources to do it either. So I think as I started recognizing like his more specific things that he was teaching and what he thought about was happening in the world and some of his priorities with what he would teach or not teach, started kind of pulling apart this idea that Jesus knew exactly what was happening all the time. And he went and did all these things super intentionally. Like, I think because we're taught Jesus is God and knew exactly what was happening and had a plan, that him going to the temple as a teenager, like, was a thing that he specifically did. And he knew, I don't know, like, this exalted, deified version of this person who every single thing he did was ordained by God and specific and had a plan and was fulfilling prophecies from generations before. And I think the more I learned about him, the more I was like, oh, I think that's superimposed. I don't know that he knew as much that was going on as we assumed that he did. I'm going to stop at that.
What? You're just going to stop there? Oh, my God. Yeah. Okay. Do you want to, like, maybe back up some of what you just said in terms of, like, because I'm thinking, like, what people listening might be thinking, right? I don't even know who all I'm thinking of when I think of this, but questions that come up when you say something like that is, okay, but that's what the Gospels tell us, right? Like, he was doing this to fulfill the prophecy, blah, 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 right? So, are you saying that the Bible's not true? Like, I'm trying to think, like, remember being in that place? Like, how are you reconciling some of these existing frameworks with what you just said?
Yeah. Oh, God. I don't want to be the one on record saying this out loud.
Yeah, you do it.
No. okay, so I guess it's important to know before I start talking about Jesus, letting go of biblical literacy and inerrancy was like out.
Literalism?
Yeah, yeah. What? Literacy? Oh, yeah.
I decided to stop understanding the Bible.
Yeah, I decided to not be able to read. So letting go of this book being perfect, inerrant, exalted, every word breathed by God, like I'd let go of that a long time before I got to Jesus. And so a question like that, I would answer like, people put that in there. I don't know how to have this conversation without just like opening cans of
words. It's just, it's too much, right? It goes, it's too there, much. There's a limitation to how much we can cover in this one episode.
I don't know who's listening to this.
Hi, Mom. I'm going to send this to Mom.
Oh, God, don't.
I know, that's terrible. Okay, yeah, so the backdrop on that is, like, part of the process that we went through was recognizing the Gospels, even specifically, because that's, you know, most of what we have about Jesus, were written by certain people for a certain audience with a certain agenda in mind. Mm-hmm. And the way that these writers at this time in their culture wrote is not the way we write our stuff now. They weren't writing a documentary or a historical document, right?
Right.
They were telling a story using imagery and metaphors and old, like, things that the culture would recognize readily to communicate things they believed and were convinced about regarding Jesus, and trying to help their particular audience get to a place in their own faith journey about this person and around the journey of Israel, right? So,
yeah, and I think an important piece of that for me, just kind of factually, was learning and coming to, like, reconcile that the Gospels were written long after Jesus had died by people who were probably not there when it happened. And that felt heretical to read and to be like, wait, what are you talking about? Like, yeah. Mark wrote this book. He followed Jesus around and had a notebook and wrote all this down. And then we got it here in English thousands of years later, perfect and inerrant. Right. And it's like, that's not what happened.
Right.
So I guess for me, I'm like, yeah, these were people telling the story of this person who was a really important figure, and them trying to wrestle out, like, how to have a relationship with the divine and how to, like, navigate social justice, but also, like, record oral tradition that they'd been handed down that they didn't witness. It was, like, at least a 60-year gap or something like that. And immediately I'm like, any historical documents that we have that are not eyewitness accounts and happen decades after the actual event, like, that's like, if we're going for fact and exactly what happened, I'm like, that's not,
they're not credible sources.
Yeah, right. Like, that would never stand up in any kind of court of law, you know?
Yeah.
And I think we look at the Bible that way, that it's like, right, this needs to be court of law. Yeah. This is the lay of the land, but that's not what that wasn't the point of the thing. And so, yeah, so I'm like, there's a lot of man in that book. And I actually think that that's okay if we recognize that that's what it was for, and we don't force it to be God every time, all, you know?
Yeah.
So
then if that gets to be in a place, if that gets reconciled and, like, sobered up, then all of a sudden you start reading the stories about Jesus, the miracles, the parables, the, you know, the healings, whatever, the sermons. You start seeing this person participating in a culture and in a time in history in a different way than we did in Sunday school.
Totally.
Right? Mm-hmm. So what were some of the things that clicked that you're like, oh, this was a moment for me, exercising discretion?
Yeah.
I know, I'm like thinking, oh, God. Like, okay, for example. Oh, no, I regret it already.
I don't want to say anything right
now. I know.
Now.
It's like, this is as far as we should have gone.
I'm in a corner. I'm going
to
get out.
Okay, this is interesting to me. Like, a couple times in the Gospels, the legitimacy of Jesus' birth is being called into question, right? And I didn't really think about or notice it that much back in the day, because when I was indoctrinated, those things didn't really matter. You know, like, they were easily dismissed, yeah, right? Like, you could easily just wash them away in some kind of convenient explanation, and it just goes away.
Non-believers.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
And so this time when I'm reading from, like, scholars and historians who are looking at these texts and being like, hey, this actually means something, right? And they, like, pull it apart and, like, connect the dots. You're like, oh, how did I not see this before? But they're referencing verses you've known your whole life. You're totally like, oh my God, I feel like an idiot.
Right.
And so anyway, the whole notion of Jesus being of an illegitimate birth, like his father not being in the picture, which is why they would call him Son of Mary, which was such an offensive thing to say in such a patriarchal culture, right?
Yeah, right?
That was purposeful and intentional. And there's a way you could spin that if you want to stay in the evangelical, you know, worldview. But people studying these texts who this is their profession and their, like, committed career, they're like, this is happening because there were rumors and questions around who Jesus' father was because he wasn't in the picture.
Right.
And then we're like, the next natural question is, well, then what do you mean? Like, what, Joseph, what do you know?
What do you mean?
What do you mean?
That is deconstruction in a nutshell.
Yeah, right.
It's Jennifer Lawrence doing that.
Jennifer Lawrence eating really hot chicken.
What do you mean?
Anyway, and so then you just get to a point where, like, there are scholars who have the audacity to just simply tell you, as if you should know this already, that the Joseph character in the Gospels was made up by the author, that he wrote that guy in to tell his story, that there was no Joseph figure in the life of Jesus according to history. And you're like, what?
Yeah.
And the only proof or evidence anyone has historically about this is the Bible. And again, when you look at the Gospels, the way they were written, how we got them, you're like, this isn't historical documentation. So that is alarming and a lot to reconcile. And so that was like a shock. That was like, I remember that being like a little like, whoa, what are we talking about? This is wild. And then going into like pulling in Paul and the way that Paul perceived Jesus, right? The way that Paul saw the world. Oh God, let's get it closer. The way Jesus saw the world, right? Like acknowledging Jesus and Paul both being apocalypticists. Yeah. Like that doesn't come up a ton, but that's like a really important piece of information.
I didn't even know that word until
we started. Yeah, you didn't.
I didn't know that was like a frame of belief and thinking that they had back then until we started digging into this. Like, okay. We didn't learn that growing up. Yeah. It was like, they knew what was going on. They were just following truth.
Right.
They were following the Holy
Spirit.
They
were preparing us for what's going to happen. Right. That still hasn't happened yet.
Right. Not that they had a very specific lens and that their time limit was very short. You know, like, I didn't know any of that.
Yeah. Do you want to speak to that? Like, what does that mean? What happened to you?
You put me in a corner. We did this.
I can do it if you want.
No, it's fine. Okay, so learning that Jesus and, well, likely that John the Baptist first and right, then Jesus right. and then Paul, right? Like all these major figures, all of our New Testament heroes were likely apocalypticists.
What's an apocalypticist?
Like meaning that they believed that at any moment, very soon, within the same generation,
the Son of Man,
God was going to send the Son of Man to come and basically the world was going to get really bad. Like it was going to get as bad as it could be. And then the Son of Man was going to come, wipe out all the evil, like essentially Left Behind.
No, like, God.
It's got that kind of vibe to it, which I'm like, wow, okay. So I'm like, oh, they pretty much put legs to this idea, but it's ancient. So that like the Son of Man is going to come, wipe out all the evil, and then establish God's kingdom on earth in like a new glorious kingdom, essentially like what we perceive of as heaven, but here on earth. And so,
which is why we have in the Bible the mother of the sons of thunder, right? James and John's mom being like, let my son sit at your right and left hand when the kingdom comes.
Right.
She's not talking the heaven that evangelicalism is pitching in their gospel. Right. She's talking when the Son of Man comes and like sets everything right and this new order is established in this life.
Right.
Right.
She's like next week, can they be like their buddies now?
Right.
Like,
put them on your cabinet, please.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And so I think when I recognized that, someone in my Ashes group was like, was he like one of those preachers on the street corner that's like, God's coming back right now? I'm like, I don't think he was like crazy, but it has some of those vibes that are like, it's ending now. And so a lot of the urgency in Jesus' messages and a lot of the like intensity for how he approaches the world is because he's like, we got to get it together. This is ending soon. And you're going to want to make sure that you're on the right side of this or you're going
to be
in fountains of blood is kind of the attitude,
yeah.
Which is awkward to think about in tandem with peace, loving, donkey riding Jesus.
Right. And so when you kind of start observing some of these ideas that you never hear at church, right? Mm-hmm. This does not get taught from the pulpits that I was ever sitting under. But when you start hearing some of this and considering it and like plugging it into all that you've read in the Gospels multiple times, it's awkward because it's like, wait, wait, that makes sense. It's starting to connect some dots I never cared to connect. I didn't need to, but all of a sudden there's like a new context that actually is like shaping in the story.
Yeah, right.
Stories, plural. Right. And you're like, oh my God, he did talk with that urgency. He did have this finality and this like line of demarcation that was like an emphasis within his preaching. And then it makes you like read his sermons differently, you know,
totally.
And like the things he responded to and and especially Paul too. And then Paul shows up and has in a more extreme version of that. You're like, that makes sense. These guys genuinely believed next week, next year, a few years from now, this is all going to end.
Right.
What a worldview.
Yeah. And that's part of the reason Paul's like, I got to go everywhere. I got to tell everyone. Cause he's like, the clock is literally ticking.
Mm.
And I never really put it together before. I was like, oh, he's just like, you got to save as many souls while you're alive, as in like his lifetime is the time limit. But actually for him, it's like the Son of Man's coming back at any point. And then I think another piece.
Don't get married. Don't change your career.
Right.
Don't seek liberation if you're a slave. It's almost over.
Right.
Just hang tight.
Yeah.
Right.
He's like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Just get as many people on the boat with you before this flood wipes us out. It's the attitude. And I think another piece about Jesus it's kind of like watching an M. Night Shyamalan movie for the second time and being like, wait, what? Like, he told me who the bad guy was in the beginning, or like, this was, you know, like, it's really strange to go back to that and just have a completely different experience. And so realizing another piece that Jesus didn't think he was the Son of Man, like the Son of Man was like this other figure. We always read like Jesus has all these names, like Jesus the Christ and the Son of Man and the Son of God and the like all this stuff. And I was always like, why does he have so many titles? But it's always kind of smoothed over, like, whatever.
He's Emmanuel. He's the Messiah. He's the Prince of Peace. Like, there's all these titles. Yeah.
And it's like, whatever. He's just, like, he just has a lot of names. It doesn't matter. It's all talking about Jesus. But actually, if you're reading it from the historical perspective, he's not talking about himself. He's not saying the Son of Man will come with all this stuff. He's
talking about himself in third person.
Yeah. He's not predicting the future of what he's going to be doing. He's saying, this is going to happen. We need to be prepared. And he's not, like, putting himself in the seat where he's the one judging. He's the one establishing God's kingdom. That's not
the attitude. Son of Man is going to be doing the judging, not Jesus. Totally. Which, that was a crazy distinction for me. I was like, what are we talking about? And then, I think at that point in the book, I was like, is this author crazy? Like, what are we? Because it was a lot to have to process through, you know?
Right.
And then they just keep going and further substantiating what they're pointing out. And you're like, oh, no, was I crazy?
Yeah. I'm fully convinced I was crazy.
Now I'm like, I was the stuff I believed. This is wild. Because I didn't, when someone shows up and like disproves the things you believed and they have way more evidence than you do, right? You're like, okay, the more dignified response here is just to admit fault, admit failure.
I'm sorry.
And repent, right? Yeah, I'm sorry. Totally. I was bigoted.
Also, like, why didn't anyone tell me?
Yeah.
Like an idiot. Right.
And so there's some anger, right? Obviously, that comes with that too. But another thing that comes up with Jesus is, right, like, if he's not the Son of Man and the Son of Man's coming, there's also these, like, assumptions or, like, maybe even assertions that Jesus considered himself the king of the Jews, right? That he was going to be the one sitting on the throne, right? He's not the one doing the judging or coming in and wiping out everything, but he would be the one who would ascend the throne and be God's chosen. So, like,
ruler.
It seems like he did believe that about himself. Yeah. So when Caesar asks, are you the king of the Jews? He's like, you said it, not me.
Right?
Like, it's like a weird conversation. Anyway, so that was like a wild thing to have to, like, and it does, I think, humanize Jesus in a way. Like, you're like, this guy, he's not capable of being wrong. So, like, what's happening right now, right? Like, that was a lot to have to process.
Yeah. And I think that piece for me specifically, him being the king of the Jews, never made sense growing up. I was like, okay, why do they care? Whatever. But understanding the context of the Roman Empire and, like, also the Jewish, like, religious order, him even thinking about being the king of the Jews is, like, a literal death sentence. And so the sign over his cross being, here is the king of the Jews, in, like, a mocking way.
Like a warning even, right?
Yeah, and it's like he looks like this because he thinks he's this, and we will not tolerate this.
Look what happens to people who think that.
Yeah, exactly. And it never made sense to me. I was like, why did they kill him? Like, was it just Satan? Like, Satan just inspired them, and they just needed to.
Right.
And, like, the logical reasoning as to why they did what they did never made sense until I understood the political power struggle going on, the reason that that the Jews could take Jesus to the Romans and have them do their dirty work is like, oh, this is a power play. And it never made sense to me before. And when I realized that, it made me pretty sad.
Why sad?
I mean, sad because he didn't know it was coming. It wasn't part of his plan. I think the narrative, when it hit me, the thing that hit me the hardest that still makes me sad is that he didn't plan to sacrifice himself. He wasn't born so he could die. Like, that narrative is based on
the later viewers trying to, like,
make sense of this horrible thing
trying to dignify this friend they lost, who was the most beautiful, profound person they'd ever known, who taught them all these incredible things, was changing the world, and then this happened. They're looking back on these horrific events and, like, he predicted this.
Right.
He was preparing for it. He was giving himself up. He's actually above all of that.
Yeah. He knew it was coming, therefore it's not as tragic.
Because
he had a choice in the matter. And when I realized that wasn't the case, that this historical human Jesus, not the God who knows everything and is prepared for everything and therefore can't be shocked or traumatized, like,
who didn't pray this, Father, pass this cup from me,
right,
not my will be done, be yours, right? And he chose, like, that actually didn't happen.
Right.
There wasn't an agency or a willing into this horrific thing he was going to go through. He didn't see it coming.
Right. He didn't. And he was literally betrayed. And I think Judas never really made sense to me before, where it was like, okay, so Judas is indwelled by Satan and then like moved the pieces forward, but recognizing that Judas betrayed him and got him in trouble with the Empire and got him murdered. I think when that hit me, that I was like, this man was murdered. That made me really sad for the person of Jesus,
yeah.
The human being who was genuinely like trying to create a better world and was literally like preparing for a better world, got his legs cut out from underneath him because of the Empire. And I think that is really sad.
Really human.
Really human.
Yeah.
And it's hard not to draw parallels to other humans, right? Like
right.
Martin Luther King Jr., sure. Like a similar dynamic. Not saying that Martin Luther King Jr. is like on the same level, but I think the attitude is like, we recognize that that was an injustice, not something that God somehow cosmically planned to make the world a specific, you know, like it's actually a lot simpler to recognize that like human greed and power got this man killed. Not God needed some kind of weird blood sacrifice to be acceptable, you know?
Yeah. It's really sobering and somber. And yeah, and then there's lots of other things I could go into. And I'm like, hey, I think let's rein it in. We've gone
farther than I wanted to go.
Let's make one more closing statement or acknowledgement, just because this is such a huge thing that we're like touching, dancing on a little bit. So the question comes up, like, if Jesus didn't choose to die, if he wasn't a willing sacrifice for us, then what are you saying about the Gospels? What are you saying about the Bible? Like, isn't all of this pointing to Jesus being the sacrificial lamb, right? The lamb was slain since the foundation of the world, right? But before any of this came to be, like, what are you saying about that, right? And
yeah. Can I plead the fifth?
So we have a hurting community writing to a harassed, oppressed people group who have been through some horrific events, both within their intimate community and then also just in the socioeconomic world they're living in at large.
Right.
And they're trying to like process and work through and move forward as a group. How do we make sense of and like continue on? Where's our hope, right?
Right.
And so I had to like get to a place where I stopped feeling like these Gospel authors lied to me, manipulated me, twisted the truth, because like that's kind of a reaction you have when you're born into a literalist perspective on all these things.
Totally.
So I had to like forgive them for that and realize like, oh, that never actually happened. They never tried to behave or perform to the standards I was taught to hold to the Bible. Actually, they're doing the best they could to grieve and compensate for this shocking loss that like crippled their movement, but then in other ways like shot it to the stars, if you will, right?
Yeah.
And so you're like, that's really human and understandable. And I'm like, I don't know. If I was in the same position as some of these other people around Jesus, what would I have done? How would I have coped and moved forward? And, you know, anyway, so that's a lot. Listen, here are some follow-up things for anybody who's like harassed and cares enough to want to look into these things. You can email me at contact@mikemyashiro.com. That comes to my team. If you have any questions, book references, you'd like, we have different directions this can go depending on what you're more interested in. If you want to be part of a group of people who are processing this stuff, there is a group called Ashes that my team, we have in my world. Mika hosts it every Monday night.
Yep.
They gather and process and talk through these things and can compare notes and like go through the journey. I think there's lots of tears that happen or at certain points in the process.
Yeah, totally.
Naturally, right? But it's just, it's a space for people to get to like process and verbally just like go through it with each other, hear each other, witness each other, share experiences, you know, from your learning experience, but also just like the culture you were raised in and how it was like relating to all these ideas.
Yeah. And also like how to relearn how to be a person.
Oh,
like how do I navigate an election year given what I know now? Or like, what do I do with my parents who are still steeped in this stuff?
And
yeah, I think there's a big, I think, learning curve of having to like reanimate your life when a lot of what it was based on is maybe not helpful anymore or like not a part of a thing you want to subscribe to, you know? And so it's a whole process.
Yeah. Okay. I'm gonna put you on the spot. I don't know this. Do you have like a crash course set of videos people could have access to if they join the Ashes group that kind of catches them up on this whole Jesus subject?
Yeah. We have like kind of a short highlight kind of thing, for people to catch up a little bit. It has been going for a year, so there's a lot of ground that we've covered, but it's not like we're done. So yeah, there's a highlight reel we can send to help people catch up.
Okay, great. And then also, this is a secondary option. I'm hosting an Ashes book club that meets on Monday nights also before Ashes. Yeah. So we're reading through some books. We just finished a book on hell. We're about to, at the recording of this episode, in a couple of weeks, we're about to jump into a book called What is the Bible by Rob Bell. So just kind of 30,000 feet overview. What is the Bible, right? Just kind of pulling apart with, and then we're going to go on a more specific journey down the road of this stuff. So if that's a space you want to get into the more nitty gritty, detailed, you know, behind the scenes stuff on this, that's a good space for you to join if that's something you're interested in. We'll provide the links in the bottom of the episode here in the show notes so you can join either. But those are some helpful resources we've kind of put together to try and like give people a space to humanly like tackle some of this stuff, because it's a lot. Mm-hmm. And it's not an overnight thing. It's not a quick fix. I tell people in my groups, hey, treat this more like you're descending a ladder or climbing, whichever direction you want to consider you're going, rather than jumping off of a building, right? Because the jumping off of a building is like harmful. It's very impactful. It's hard to recover from. The ladder thing, rung by rung, that's a lot more manageable. Your mental health doesn't suffer from that, right? Like, you can just like replace boxes with new boxes and keep going. Mm-hmm. There's just a very human process of this. We didn't get to where we got in our indoctrinated beliefs overnight. You're not going to get out of them overnight, right? So I highly recommend having a space of support that's paced and like manageable, so you can just digest these things as they come. You need to give yourself permission and space to breathe and think and process and react. And there's a lot of emotion that comes with it. Yeah. So either of these spaces, I think, are great places to plug in if you're looking for a place where you don't want to do this alone. You want some direction, but you especially want support. We've got that for you. We are not experts, but we are pulling from experts, you know, to help kind of guide this place and provide the material we're looking at. So,
yeah, and I think it is interesting even to know how much research has gone into this and how much of it I just never even knew existed.
Right.
Like, it just like wasn't even on the table. It wasn't even a question. It was like, this is a given, obviously. And to be on this side of things and see like, actually, there's a lot of research. There's a lot of very basic understanding that scholars have that I was not given about this book and about these people. And yeah, I think opening up that,
you mean about the Bible,
about the Bible and about Jesus, like, is a big shift. And it's kind of scary to be like, wow, this was here the whole time and nobody told me. And just having to kind of work through those emotions in and of themselves on top of the beliefs and how it affects you, it's a lot.
And then on top of that, it's like you do all this and then you look at the people who are still fully invested in all these things you just like realize are not true. You're like, what are they doing?
Yeah.
What is going? And then there's this necessary like process of like, how do I relate to people who are still there, who refuse to look at any further evidence or like corrupt, you know, like, when this stuff is getting confronted and critically pulled apart and you just won't look at it, you're like, that's a different issue, right? There's something else going on here. That's a problem. And it absolutely impacts human life and decision making and legislation. And, this stuff really matters. It's really important. It is messy. We were both kind of lamenting before this episode, like, I don't want to tell the truth anymore. It's telling the truth is exhausting, right? Like, it's a lot of work.
Right.
Anyway, so thank you everyone for listening. I know this is a lot. Again, the email is contact@mikemyshore.com. The links and email, they're all below in the show notes. If you need a space, questions, comments, you just need to react, we are available. Thanks for being here. We'll see you in the next episode.
Bye.
Bye.
Listen, there's more where this came from. If you want to dive deeper, check out mikemyashiro.com.